So, today's daf is this wonderful daf that will keep us opening our mouths either in horror or excitement or trepidation.
All these pretty pictures. Hey,
yeah, all of them wrong. It makes it even better. Fine, let's review it. Why don't we just start from the Mishnah once again, since it's such a beautiful Mishnah, such a wonderful pasuk to remember this time of the year during the Churban. We can already talk about the Shiva and the Chamusa. We take this one. Minayin larugash shishal shishat fachim shezorim betocha chamisha zeronim arba al arba ruchot aruga v'achat beemtza shenemar ki ka'oret totzitz mecha uchelina zeroer tatzmiach. Note that it doesn't say zara tatzmiach, it says zeroer tatzmiach. My mashma, Rav Yehuda, ki ka'oretz totzi tzimcha, has to be understood like this. Totzi itself already means chad. Tzimcha is another chad. That makes trip. Zeru eha, as the Bishop points out, as Lashon Rabbi, makes another trip. Is mi'arva. And then you say that's mi'arv, you have to add another one to that. So you see, that's chamisha. Now you say, so but how do I know in what size I put the chamisha? The Chachamim have determined that there's no problem in that type of construction, because even in the element of that construction that would have a problem of Yanika, the Rabbanan have determined that the shiur of Yanika is such that you would still have room for a middle zera. Now, there's many, many different approaches among the Rishonim to this sugya, and at least six well-known different approaches, extraordinarily different approaches. But we are going to take the simplest, most straightforward approach, which is Rashi, and we won't bother ourselves at this point. It's how difficult enough to get the Rashi straight, so we'll go with Rashi's pshat, very, very straightforward. So again, Rashi learns like this. Well, I mean, this part everybody learns. There's two issues in Kilayim. In Kilayim, we have number one determination has to be the question of whether it looks mu'urvav. That's the fundamental issue. If it doesn't look mu'urvav, there's nothing to discuss. Then it's completely kosher. Now, let's say you have a fence. Now, as you all recall, we've had many cases. You can plant a field of one mean up to a field of another mean, even for Kaloya Karam, and so there's no problem. It's certainly being Yenik Me'adani. The roots are going down underneath the fence. I mean, you have, like, right on one side of the fence, you've got one mean. On the other side of the fence, you've got another mean. What about the fact that they're being Yenik? It doesn't matter. There's a Mechitza. It's clearly different. Graphical distinctions are also considered to be sufficient to make that difference. It doesn't have to be necessarily a Mechitza. So if I create a graphic in which anybody who's looking at it sees that this is one min and that's another min, I don't have to lie. Even though there may be underneath the surface mixing of the roots, that's not a problem. Once it's not so nicker graphically, then I have to determine whether it's kilayim. That's determined by joint yanika. The Chachamim define the shear in which an area is yanik. And based on that shear, this particular configuration of five separate mini within a small aruga garden patch boils down to recognizing that the five minim that the pasuk was referring to is five minim within a 6x6 tefachim patch. That's how they understood it. So now let's try to figure out what that would be referring to. If we take a look in our diagram here, which is actually an accurate diagram, we'll see that there's two completely different issues that we're talking about. One is the shaila of the sides. And we've got, it's unfortunately small, but what we have over there is a line of zeronim. So let's imagine that each one of those one-third of a tefach line that you've got over there, which is lav davka, is basically another cabbage. So you're looking at a line of cabbage on the right side, going down. The corner doesn't have anything in it, you see. And then along the top, you've got some parsley. Also, up to the next corner up on the left, on the upper left. That corner doesn't have anything in it. And then you've got a line of tomatoes coming down the other side, leaving the corner again empty. And then you've got a line going down on the other side of radishes. Now, since you have over here the four corners are empty, each one of these lines is only the playouts, but it's clear that they're not part of the same, they may be part of the same patch, but they're not part of the same garden. I don't have any worry about their being together. If I had pulled it all the way up to the edge, that would be very confusing. I mean, I can't really tell where one begins, where one ends. It doesn't give me a sharp picture of a distinguished shura. In the middle, we don't have anything that clearly distinguishes the middle from any of the sides. It might just be something that you threw in as a continuation of the side. So what we have to do over there is we have to be marfik at the shear of Yanika. The shear of Yanika is 1.5 tefach. 1.5 tefach, of course, on the side of each different min. So in order to get that fifth min in the middle, we're going to have to make sure that it's not mixed in the shorashim. And it doesn't mean that they actually shorashim have to touch each other. It just means that they can't be drawing nourishment and sustenance from the same area. So for that, we're going to have to leave 3 tefachim in between. Now, obviously, we're not really leaving 3 tefachim in between because the whole area, well, let's just finish, is 6x6. And there's a number of different approaches to this. Tosfos' approach is that the amos that are mentioned by Kilayim, the Gemara's Kaveh elsewhere, are considered always to be in terms of amot shochakot. And that means that they are, it's a lashon of tzchok, they're laughing, meaning they're expansive. Expansive amos are larger than the smaller amma. So therefore, what you have over here is really the, in the one hand, you've got a larger area, slightly larger area, which accommodates 3 normal tefachim within an amma by, 2 amma by, really amma point five hedge, which is bigger. Rashi says that the Kabbalah of the Shiur of the Yanika is including the Zera. In other words, it means including the Mokum of the Zera, you have to leave 1.5 tefachim. That's all. It doesn't mean you need it between them, 1.5 tefachim. It doesn't extend to the side. It's with the Mokum of the Zera. It's 1.5 tefachim. In which case, that's what I have over here, 1.5 tefachim on each side, including the Zera that it's next to. That's the simplest explanation. So therefore, what I'd be able to put in the middle is only 1 stalk, basically. I could put a carrot in the middle. But that's the idea. I have over here 6. We're looking over here to figure out what we can do to maximize our variety, not necessarily, obviously, to maximize our yield, but we can maximize our variety this way. So it's able, Chazal understood that the meaning of the pasuk. I mean, why is the Navi stressing all of these different lashonos in a garden? Because it's being miramis to us. That, I mean, it's bichlal, it's such a beautiful thing to see the way Chazal take Yeshayahu's words. But he's going to stomp, throw out the land that puts out, and it plants, and it extends. There's no metaphors that don't have a real sense of how we relate to the earth. If it's not Shayach, would there be such a thing? It would be to any Ben Yisroel. It would be a nasty metaphor. What's he trying to say? What, he's talking about Kalayim over here? I mean, that's what you would feel. What do you mean that the land is what? Is giving 4 things that the Akkadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't want? Why would we? So it must be that this is a remez, that I can take a look at a patch of land and I can actually see in it 5 different meanings. And so I feel the sense of productivity of the earth is that it has the capability to give me 5 things as I look at it in one patch.
A complete salad.
It's a beautiful thing. It's like the feeling you feel you go to the shuk sometimes. It's overwhelming the different players. And there's a feeling of the, you know, the it's like the horn of plenty. Yeah.
Just from the idea of Nicker, the first one.
Nicker,
recognition.
Yes. Graphic recognition.
I mean, you have these small little spots in the open in the corner, and you have a huge spot in the middle, just from recognition alone. I mean, it seems a little crazy, you need the 3 in the middle, because it seems the most distinct as opposed to
the corner. No, the thing that distinguishes it is not the spot, per se. It's the direction. The reason that I have this spot is because if I wouldn't, I'd have a problem at the edges.
So it's understood that a road continues this way and it doesn't.
Right.
That's why it's...
Yes.
Okay. Yes. It's because people normally grow it.
Right. At least the way Rashi is learned.
Okay.
I mean, others indeed understand the whole thing to be very, very different. That I have dots, not lines like this.
So it's like a premise of what's the normal agricultural way.
We'll see. There's more. I mean, there's other things that we're going to have to take into consideration. It's the length of the leaves and whether they're in one direction or another direction. You know, are you planting things with furrows? In a direction east-west or north-south and so on. A lot of issues that we'd have to take into consideration as we go through the sugya. We'll see there's other things. So therefore, this would be now a combination of two yesodas. The yesod of graphic definition, which is called Hecker, and the yesod of Yanika. And those are the two yesodas in Kilayim. By the way, it's kedai to mention here that according to Rashi, there's an amazing Rashi here, which all of the Rishonim are despoiled on, including Tosfos, in many, many places where Rashi keeps doing this. He keeps claiming, we've discussed it before, he keeps claiming that Kiloy Zroyim is the Rabbanan. And when he brings the Raya that it's okay if there's a Heker from the case of a Kerem, where you have a Mechitzas a Kerem, so Kol Shekein a Heker for Kiloy Zroyim, that's only the Rabbanan, for sure there should be no problem. And the Pella is that Rashi himself in Beferes says that Kol Yisroel is the Oraisa, which is clear from so many Gemaras. So, no. There's a beautiful pshat that really takes Rashi by the horns and is masbir like this, that Rashi is going, we know there's a machlokas, how to understand Kilayim. This is a machlokas in the Gemara, but again, Kiloy Akerim, whether Kilayim is the act of Zuriya the Kilayim, or Kilayim is the fact that it's mixed. So one man, the Yarmah holds, in order to be fired on Kilayim, you had to have made a Kilayim at the moment that you planted it. Let's say that there would be a Kerem that exists, and then you would add a seed into the Kerem. So then, that's not the Chiyuv of Kilayim, it has to be at the time that you planted. There it's a machlokas. Rashi is learning, apparently, times the Aruch HaShulchan. And when it comes to Kiloy HaZroyim, everybody has made it. That you would need, the equivalent by Kiloy HaKerem, is that you need to have the Chartzan and the Chit and the Seirah B'mapolat Yad. All at one time you're planting a Kerem and wheat and barley. So the equivalent for Kiloy HaZroyim is that you definitely would have to plant, let's say, wheat and barley B'mapolat Yad. And if you have a patch of parsley, let's say, you put in now tomatoes, since it was already there, the parsley, that's not considered to be Kilayim, except Minerabon. That's, in other words, the kiyum of a field that wasn't planted with an act of Kilayim is a Durabonin, Rashi is learning. Fine. That already is supportable. There's a big Chazanish also shows how it works out, and all of the sugya is very, very nice. So, but anyway, getting back to our matzav here, we have a strange situation. Because on the one hand, we have a pasuk. The pasuk only gives us the number 5. It doesn't talk about the size of the patch that I have in my mind when I'm looking at a piece of land that can produce 5. And yet the Mishnah says, it's a given from this pasuk that you've come back to us finally. Where have you been for so many years? How many years has it been since you last attended? Couldn't be that many, I don't think. I think it's a good 3 years. That's a big piece of his life. You're figuring an adult's life, he hasn't been here for 30 years. Do you remember the place? When he starts remembering the sugyas, that's when I get it.
It was a
So how, says the Gemara, how does the Mishnah make this statement that I can have 5 within 6? So we said a very strange answer to that. The Rabbanan figured out that it has to be 6. Because, well, how do they figure it out? They figured out scientifically. Kimu the Rabbanan. Ask the Gemara, what, so on such a basis you're going to tell me that it's a matter of a remez and a pasuk, that 5 and 6, I mean, maybe they're mistaken. good, I understand, you know, it's every day this thing is healthy, the next day this thing is not healthy. You make errors, and then you fix it up as time goes on. So how do you know that you can trust that type of hashorah? I mean, all in the other kimla, the rabban, and milsi. I mean, what makes you say that you can base an approach that you have to a pasuk on an assumption that you're making about the nature of some type of natural phenomenon? Fantastic raya. This is absolutely fantastic raya. The Torah says, "Lo tasi gvure achasha gavuri shamim." Which is a very, I mean, what is it talking about? The part's talking about stealing. So what's the asher gavlu rishonim? Whatever a guy owns, you're not allowed to take. Chazal derives from here that the meaning is that you cannot plant something in a way that is going to cause your friend's field to be unusable because of your lying. So in other words, don't violate, forget about stealing his land, don't violate the use of his land by putting in something that's going to cause the edge of his field to be collided. So in other words, that means that the Torah is telling you that you have to be careful at the shear of Yanika. And the shear of Yanika, the Torah is giving as Asher Gavlu Rishayim. What do you mean Asher Gavlu Rishayim? I mean, whatever the din is. Well, who are these Rishayim that are Gavlu? It's a very strange passage, you must admit. You could simply say, Lo Tasik, Hurayachah. And then no matter what it's talking about, what does it have to do with Rishayim? So you see from here clearly that there are those to whom we look to define for us certain realities. And the Torah uses them as the basis of Yisurim D'Oraisa. You can't say it more clearly. Those Rishonim, so like Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman Yom Reb Yonasan says, you know, take a look in the Pasuk. Might get see the Ela B'nei Seir HaChori Yoshevei Haaretz. What is that supposed to mean? This is the story now of the B'nai Seir Achori that Esav came now and took over their land. And they live on the land. It's very nice where everybody else is living in space satellites. Oh, to Kuleyama Yoshevei Rakia. What do you mean they live on the land? I mean, I should hope so. Ela Shayu Bikiim B'Yishuvah Shel Aretz. The point over here is they're Yoshevei Aretz. Most people, they may be walking on the land. They ain't living on the land. They don't know anything about the land. They don't happen to be on the land. They might as well be in outer space. These people were actually on the land. They knew the land inside out. Shahayu Omrim, Malokon Hazel Zayit, Malokon Hazel Kfanim. They could actually take a measuring stick and measure out on the ground. See this little piece over here? This 1.3 meter strip? Perfect for planting tomatoes. So in other words, they had a sense of which piece of land provides the nutrients for what type of growth. Why are they called the Chori? They're called the Chori. We dash the word Chori from Reyach, like a, you know, being Misaris the word. Shemerichim et haaretz. They would actually sniff at the ground, and they could sniff its nutrients. They could detect what's in it, and thereby they could understand which particular things are in it. So, I mean, we do this kind of thing with stress spectrographic and gas spectrographs. Taste we're getting to. But they could sniff, and the truth is that the smell is the closest that you get to the detection of single molecules of a particular. They could actually sniff, and they were like dogs in a sensitivity.
We have tests now that test the acidity of the.
You know, that's a tougher portion. That's a tougher portion. But here we're talking about specific chemicals that are in the ground. I mean, that's a great trick. But I mean, it's not. You know, it's not that. It's interesting, there are cases of malfunctioning senses of smell that people have, he describes them, Sachs, Oliver Sachs, just absolutely amazing, of people had, strokes or something that affected them suddenly, and they became insanely sensitive to smells. They could smell like, mom's like a dog, which they could detect every person by the difference in their smell, and every chemical that was in the land. I mean, it would go, bombs go crazy from it, because everything smells absolutely horrific, and so many different things. So, okay, so these people were Bikiyim. And they were called also Chivi. Now, they're not called Chivi because of that they were actual Chivi of the umas. This is a different theory, as Tosis points out. But we find that the Bnei Seir are called chivi because, as Tosis points out, it says bas tzivon achivi. What's rather chivi? Oh, so why are we calling them chivi? They're called chivi because they're like snakes. Chivi is a snake. And therefore, Amar of Papa Shoyer Tuamim et Haaretz Kechivya. They could taste the ground. The farmers would do this. Taste the ground, like a snake tastes the ground. And they'll tell you exactly what nutrients are in the ground. So what do you see from here? That the Torah defines people as experts. And is Selef on their expertise for Govlu Rishayim, to be Kovei Yisurim. So from there you see that in fact the way that people are sensitive to the earth is sufficient basis to be Kovea Halachas, the definition is absurd. Very clear. In which case, if Yishayo talks about these five minim, he's talking about five minim in a garden patch of six tefachim by six tefachim. That's all there is to it. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amen, there's another Rebbe in Chori. Chori. Yeah, I said that. Since Bnei Esav walked in and took everything over, so these guys were liberated from their fields. As Rashi says, they didn't have to worry about it anymore. No more daigas, no more work, no more problems. You're all retired in your refugee camp. And you could sit around and play Sheshbet all day, and that's it, no problem. This is the mocker to the Arabs.
This is
Who cares where it is? The point is that these people have their sensitivities.
And this is not
all we're showing is that the Torah considers calls people by their expertise.
Everything that what happened to you say to Esav after the
after he left Eretz Yisrael, he took over their land. Now, Omer Evasim, the aruga that we're talking about over here.
What's the
outcome from the story? The outcome from the story is that the Torah takes the expertise of people seriously. First of all, it calls the early people who were sensitive to the earth Rishonim. Secondly, it gives them names in which it defines them as being Biki and Bishu Vishalaret. So obviously, it takes their Bikiya seriously.
On
their own kimlohu, but I mean, we see the Torah trusts such kimlohus.
Six tefachim is based on.
Yeah. Doesn't mean that they spoke to Bnei Chori, Omer Abbas, aruga tochashisha. And we're talking about an aruga. Now, there's another problem that we're ignoring over here, because we're artificially looking at this aruga as if it doesn't have anything around it. That's a little bit tricky. I mean, because assuming there's another aruga next to it, we're already getting into problems. So what about the places where the aruga itself is? Not to mention the fact that every aruga, also by definition, is not a very useful aruga. I mean, you're looking at this aruga in hyperspace. How do you water it? How do you get to it in hyperspace? So it means by definition you need to include in the word aruga an access to the aruga. Now, does the access, is that taken off of the area of the aruga? Or is it added to the area of the aruga? But certainly, it's absurd to discuss a garden patch without the possibility of watering it. So the question over here is, does it include it or not? Says Rav Asi, make no mistakes about it. We're talking about 6x6 in the actual patch, and this is besides the gvul around it that was necessary, and that becomes very important when we start thinking about, so what's around it? Are there other arugot around it? Now we have to take into consideration how wide that little area is for walking around it. Because of the distance between one patch and the next. Tanya Namiha.
Unless you would mark it. Unless you would mark it.
Well, that we haven't determined that a string is sufficient as the scrim of the mechitza. Tanya Namiha. Aruga tocha shisha. The inside of the aruga is six, it says in the Braisa. Yeah, but how large, indeed, how wide is the gvul? Gvul leha bekama. Oh, that's kiditznan. That's very clear. It says Beferish in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rochav Kimale Rochav Parsa. The width, says the Mishnah in Kauai, around the area that you're planting has to be 8 foot. But this doesn't mean our foot, which is the length of a foot. It means the width of a foot. Omer Rabbi Zeh Rabbi Tam Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa. Where does Rabbi Yehuda get this? My time, Rabbi Yehuda. It's a pasuk. Because when the Torah is describing Eretz Mitzrayim and its tremendous productivity and fertility, and saying that Eretz Yisrael is better than Eretz Mitzrayim. Because when it comes to Eretz Mitzrayim, you've got a problem. You have to keep bringing water to your garden. So it's low Eretz Mitzrayim. Because over there, v'yishkisa barak v'chakagan hayarak, you're going to have to use your feet. And we say, so how'd you get there? I use my feet. Now, v'yishkisa barak doesn't mean you attach a water pitcher to your feet. It means you're going to have to walk around carrying water and water things. That you don't need to do in Eretz Yisrael. It rains in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't rain in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, it's better. Okay, but meanwhile, you see, I mean, was it there to have to tell me you have to use your feet? I mean, that's the point. The foot is the point. That indeed, that's the point. That ma regel tefach avu nami tefach. It's focusing on the feet, meaning you're going to have to leave an area around your garden patch that is wide enough for you to put 1 foot down, another foot in front of it, and so on as you're walking by, not to trample anything. So therefore, a gvul of a patch is a tefach. Just like a regel is a tefach. Why? So now we've established that. A garden patch consists of a 6x6 tefachim patch surrounded by an additional tefach, which is its watering pathway.
If you have a field that's 10 times...
We're not talking about fields yet. Let's see. We'll start easy. Now, we have here a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, about where is this aruga situated. Because again, until now, we've blanked out everything, as if there's nothing around it. It's an aruga in hyperspace with a gisha for watering. But when we bring it down to earth, what's around it? Says Rob, nothing's around it. It's got to be talking about an aruga that somebody put in the middle of a churban. There's no other aruga. Nothing's growing around it. So there's no issue of kalayim of what's growing outside of it with what's growing inside of it. Because if there were, we're going to have a problem. Because once we have things growing outside, then we have to think about, so wait a minute, what about the distance between the things that I planted in my patch and the things in the next patch? That's what korban means. You're just looking at it from the Tel Yavna point of view.
So we can say midrash by midrash.
That's the lesson of Chazal Churva is a place that doesn't have anything on it. That's useful for planting. Why do I say this? Vayika Mokam Kronos. Why do I say this? I mean, don't I have the area of the Kronos? Okay, what does this mean? You'll note your picture, the nice pretty picture, prettiest picture on the page, which is all wrong, but it's a pretty picture anyway. That's the one towards the bottom over there on the right in Rashi. Definitely the prettiest picture on the page, right? It comes right out of a mosaic floor. I mean, it's really, really nice.
Who made this picture?
I guess the printer. I mean, he jazzed it up a bit. You know, it's a little bit right.
But these appeared in the ancient Shasim as well, isn't
it? Yeah, things like it. You know, they weren't so medieval. These were small little pictures. Okay, but anyway, it happens all the time. Uh-oh. Well, you don't like this cut. So, we have the option... I actually printed out for you a correct diagram. It's only one of them. Not all of them together. The correct diagram is the one all the way here on the right, on the bottom. Just take a look at it and you'll see what the point is. What we need to do is really very simple. If you Just look at it and then we'll talk about it quickly. Bottom right. You see how it's different. Yeah, it's coming, it's coming. I should print it out more, but I didn't.
Turning it out, maybe it's not a left.
Oh. Well, I'll work it in. You know what? Let me explain it first, and then it'll make a little bit more sense. Yeah, we should actually start selling Hawaiian yarmulkes. Now that would be a brilliant idea.
If you watch the name, though, I don't know
if it'll go. The second Hawaiian. Okay, so what's the simple issue? Being as every aruga consists of a tefach around itself. So if you put an aruga bein arugot, first of all, you're in pretty good shape because you've already got two tefachim between the plants on the edge, right? All you need is one extra tefach, and then you won't have any unique.
The width of the foot, the width.
Width, including the gvul, which is a tefach that is given to a garden patch. So you have already two tefachim. But it's not that it's for anything. It defines the standard. Obviously, if it was literally for watering, then you would only need one between two arugot. Yeah. But the point is that this defines the agricultural concept of an aruga. Aruga is six tefachim surrounded by a tefach. So we now have two tefachim between them. So ask the Gemara, so what's the big deal? To figure out a way that you can put in plants all over and to add an additional tefach? It's easy to do that. All you need to do, take a look at that picture. That picture makes it pretty clear. When it comes to the middle of each row, you see the middle of each row has, besides the addition, the two tefachim between, which is unfortunately very much out of whack in terms of scale, but there's two tefachim between each one of these arugas, right? If you add just slightly more between the edge of each one of those lines, let's say the lines that are going east-west, ignoring the markings of north-south, which are east-west, since they didn't have those conventions, but using modern conventions, take a look at the lines that are going east-west. What would it take? Remember, you've got a diagonal over here. So what would it take to distance an additional tefach between the ends of each half line? Less than a tefach, yeah? Okay, so what's the big deal? You could easily make this. Obviously, you can't have it abutting up there the way he printed the picture, because you have it abutting on top at the edge. Mm-hmm. And that's not good. But if you ignore that, make a little close to a tefach up there too. So then you've got plenty of room to put in this thing, as long as you don't fill up the entire site. You can leave one of them going sort of the east-west side, more to the east, and the other one you have going to the west-east side. You have a slight difference between them. And then you've got yourself an aruga bein arugot. You don't have to make it in the middle of a churva. What pushes Rav to say this? Amri, yeah?
So the problem with this diagram specifically is these two,
the problem is only with this diagram is only the fact that it brings the edges all the way up to the end. That's all. Each aruga has a corner.
So this corner is going to go into this one. I mean, this going this way is going to hit right into here, correct? Is that the problem?
Yeah. Each one of them is within tefach, within two tefachim of the others. You need to add a little bit of a harchaka. That's the only difference in this thing. The thing I sent you around has that harchaka put
except
in.
Except for this, you just knocked off this little piece right here. This little piece right here in the corner should not.
Yes, should not be.
In each place
where you have that what do you call that shape?
You have to break the L.
Yeah, well, yeah. What do you call it? Propeller shape. In the center, the propeller needs a little bit of space. Each L. Okay, so why would Rob say that it has to be necessarily in a churva? Amri ve'rav mishmei de'rav. Well, they say in the Beis HaMedrash, in Rav's name, that he understood the six, the five that you plant in six, b'malei akronot. He understood it to be like the diagram that you have over there on the bottom. If you don't want to have Rashi's approach in the Mishnah, what you could do is simply have, you have one line on one side that's completely full, another line on the other side that's completely full, and then you could still put in three different single stalks of different species in the middle, right? Because there you only have, you have two graphic distinctions, which are no longer meaningful that they're graphic distinctions because they're far away anyway. So the outside is six tefachim away from the other ones, so that's no problem. And down the middle, since you're only putting in one plant on top, one in the middle, one on the bottom, so you don't have any problem because you always have three tefachim, one and a half tefach on each edge between each zera and the one next to it. Since Rav is learning that you fill up the entire thing, so he doesn't have the makom kronos. And if you're going to have the whole thing filled up with various arugos, then at the edges of the kronot, you're going to have a problem because you don't have the harchoka. You're going to have it within two tefachim. Wherever those kronot come up against each other, even when you alternate them, at the edge where you create the L, it's going to be within two tefachim and the other. So we take for granted, of course the guy's not stupid, he knows he has to alternate the direction of his arugas, but where you get up to the edge, you're going to be within two tefachim. Right? So, I mean, I understand, he makes up this case in order to make life miserable. You take a case, and then you say, and given that that's the case, we have to be talking about in the middle of a churba. Does this make any sense to you? I mean, just say the case is a normal case where a guy is planting in order to maximize his use of the land. So why would he want to be mamalei sakronos and have to keep the rest of his backyard free of anything else? Just don't be mamalei sakronos and do it the way we suggested. Then you don't get into this problem. So ask the Gemara, don't be mamalei sakronos. You'll be able to get more usage out of your land by planting arugot outside of this single aruga and losing the corners. I mean, what's the big deal? And don't plant the entire inside. Why would we have a crazy case like this? No, you don't understand this. Rav is not creating a crazy case. He's telling you a maximal problem case. Since it is possible that a person would plant an aruga like this, and if he does plant an aruga like this, he's going to have a problem. Because when he puts in the next door aruga, even when he puts it in an angle, he is going to end up creating an issue at the corner. And that issue in the corner is going to have to lie. Since that's a possibility, there's going to end up being the need for us to make sure that that doesn't happen, which is Xera. If I'm going to need to be gozer it, I might as well tell you what the case is, right? I might as well take the maximal problem case. This is a maximal problem case. So you'll say, okay, but I didn't make a maximal. You didn't this time. But how do we know you don't next time? So therefore, we make a Gezera Shema Yamala Yisakronis. What if you do it this way? Therefore, we're only Matir. This configuration, even a good configuration, we're only matir if it's an aruga that has nothing around it. We can't trust everybody, such a bucky, they're going to know that they can't be mamalei sakronos. So that's the way that the Mishnah means it. You can have a single garden patch like this. Other than that, it gets too complicated.
Unless you've grown an answer, unless you...
No, we don't trust you.
Oh, it's Hosea.
We don't trust you. So we know that if you have a single aruga, there's nothing that you're going to get into trouble with. But the moment we start putting in this aruga, you're going to have to be a bucky in Hilchos Kelayim to know what you're doing. We can't give that over into everybody's hands.
Why shouldn't they even use the corners? They should not plant in the corners. But that's all the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, that's already people are not... You know, we're not thinking about it. What are we going to make Xeria? Whenever you plant a garden, you can't make the corners. It's crazy. And while Xeria has absolutely no basis in reality, you're not allowed to plant corners, people. What? You can't make that kind of thing. You say you can have single garden patches with chamisha minim. That we can say. So that's what we said. Ask the grandstand, what's the big deal? What do you think? It's Xeira what? It'll be Mamalis Akronis. No. Think for yourself, what's this going to look like? It's Mamalis Akronis. Take a look now from an air view of what you're looking at as you look down. You're looking at a single seed, basically. Let's say those middle seeds, which are now abutting a line. So you've got a line and a seed, or you've got a line and the edge of another line coming the other direction, right? That's not a problem, because that is a graphical distinction. What's a better graphical distinction than to have a line and a dot? And since you have over here, and that's the equivalent of a classic case, which is called a Rosh Tur. A Rosh Tur means the head of a shore, which is shaped like a triangular shape. You know, when it's sitting down there ready to get you, all you see is a triangle with two sticks, you run. So what you got over here, Barnea, what you got over here is the equivalent of a full Rosh Tur. A full Rosh Tur means fields are often diamonds. When they come down to where the Telem ends, you often will take all of your Tlamit back to a single point, come to that point, and then go out a little bit to the side. And each time go back, go out a little bit to the side. But when it comes to the end, you have a shape that comes sort of like to a point. That point can abut a field next to it, which is a totally different mean. Because what you have over here is essentially you have a square facing a diamond. So that's called a Rosh Tur. A square facing a diamond is a perfect graphic distinction. So you can have whatever mean you'd like in one, whatever other mean you'd like to have in the other, even though they're right up against each other. So isn't this the same thing? You have a line and a dot. A line and a dot is basically an abstracted configuration of a square and a diamond. So it boils down to the same thing. It's a highly abstract square and diamond. I'm looking only at the point of meeting. The point of meeting of every diamond with a square is a dot with a line. So why isn't this a classic Rosh Tur? V'loi ha'ela Rosh Tur yerek. Let this be another example of a Rosh Tur. It's a beferish, a Mishnah. I mean, milo tznan haya Rosh Tur yerek. Nichnas atok sadeh acher mutar. V'pnei sh'nireh sof sadeh. It's obvious when you're looking at a Rosh Tur that the minim in this are actually part of another field. Where do you have it? Yes, here. Very nice example. This one. Right here. I mean, this is a more complex example, but even this is a Rosh Tur.
Right into the other
one. Yeah, even if it goes right into it, it's clear that it belongs to something else. It's not part of this field. And therefore, it constitutes... It's not a good example for our purposes, because obviously you don't have your line of the dot. That's, I don't particularly think it's a brilliant example, but it's a good explanation of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah is talking about a Rosh Tur that actually goes in. It's Nichnas the Tov Sadeh. But it's Mutter. That they should near it Sof Sadeh. So over here, why isn't this a Rosh Tur? It's not invasive. Why isn't it a Rosh Tur? Answers the Gemara, it's not a Rosh Tur because indeed it is too abstract. Ein Rosh Tur Baruga. You're telling me that what? I mean, you're thinking computeries over here. A dot and a line is the equivalent of a square and a diamond. I mean, you don't. It's too abstract. You can't take a small thing like that and call it the equivalent of a Rosh Tur. Doesn't make an impact. Its graphical impact is very limited. It may be theoretically the equivalent thing, but it doesn't make that separation. Since the whole issue in Kilayim is the impact of the separation, this is not impactful enough. And therefore, it's not going to be a way out. So we make a gezeirah. You shouldn't come to this kind of matzah in which you think you're going to be relying on Rosh Tur. Yeah, the big bucky who's planting. It's exactly the problem, says Rav, is you guys with your semi-lamdonis, you know. So you once learned this Mishnah in Kilayim. Ah, what's the problem? It's a Rosh Tur. Ah, you're just so happy with yourself. But since ain't Rosh Tur baruga, Therefore, you would be over on Kilai. Mamela, we made a gezerah. You can't do this. Whereas Shmuel says, no, the Mishnah is not talking about a single aruga and a churva. It's talking about an aruga bein arugot. Aren't the adjoining lines of the edges of the arugot, aren't they going to get mixed up with the ones underneath? Because you only have two tvachim between them, which is the gvulim. You don't have any other indication. Yes, of course, but it's, what you do is you're notesh urlekan, vishuralekan. You leave, basically, as we explained earlier, when we asked Rob, why don't you do it this way? That's what you do. You have one shura going one way, and one shura going the other way. And that's it. And you leave the edges blank, the kronot. You don't get into any problems. And he's not gezer. And what if you will be mamali? Don't be mamali, no. You're
supposed to do the same thing, just whether you agree
or not. Exactly. Omar Ula.
But the fact that we don't make Yanika, even though the shurot of...
Yanika doesn't matter. What matters to us is only the other thing. Is only the graphic. If there's no graphic, then you got a problem with Yanika. Here you would have had a problem with Yanika, but since you arranged it in this way, you end up without a problem at all. Because you have the graphical distinction. That's the given. We started the whole sugya with that. You don't start with the issue of Yanika until you run into the problem of no graphical distinctions. Now, here's an interesting question. The shaila is like this. Since the whole idea of an aruga really works as graphics, it's not that it's working as a real analysis of unique problems, except for that middle piece. Now, the question is, if you have an actual interference in this graphic, this is a brilliant question. Suppose you have an extension into this thing that is clearly part of a completely different graphical vision. Does that affect the aruga or not? Let's say a guy comes, he drags his plow right across your garden. You now have a furrow in the middle of your garden. So, I mean, you could say, okay, the furrow basically has split this up into two separate patches of 3x6, and they're no good. You don't have an aruga here at all. You can't plant different medium in it. Too small. Or you could say, it's clear that that's coming from outer space. And what's this furrow doing in the meadow? Some madman drove his tractor over my meadow. That's not gonna destroy my garden. And if it's not gonna destroy your garden, there's an additional pella over here, because it would mean that inside the furrow you'd be able to plant yet another meadow. Because since the furrow is clearly not part of the aruga, then it means that there's no problem graphically of Kilayim anyway. So the truth is, you'd be able to even get a sixth bin in here. So it could be that this helps you, it could be that it ruins the whole aruga. How do we look at it? And therefore, ask the Gemara like this. Hifkia. Hifkia has the meaning of rip it out. Hifkia. We use the same lashon when we're talking about the use of the mishnasayim of the Kohanim to make the wicks for the Beit HaShoeva. So it says of mehem hayum mafkiim. You rip it, you pull it out. So it's trying to give you that sense. You know, you just rip right through it with a completely different thing that's irrelevant to the aruga in any way. What would be the din? You have a telem that cuts across the whole thing. Telem echad al pnei kulam. A telem is a furrow, which is normally part of a field, not part of a garden patch. So it does not belong here. What's the din? Omer of Sheshes, bo irvuv ubitel et ashura. Look, you've got mixtures. Your bottom line is you've got mixtures of plant on either side. The shura, that is the middle of the telem, is just, you don't see a telem anymore. You see a mixture of plants, therefore it's awesome. So it basically wrecks your aruga. Whereas Ravashi Amar, as some have the Gerson, argues with Ravasi, in Eruvo Mevatel Asashura. No, even if you've got Eruvo, That's not mevatel the power of the shura that's inside of the telem, and that remains in outer space. Eisvei Ravina l'Ravashi. So Ravina asked Ravashi, I'll prove to you that that's not true. It says over here that if you are planting rows in a field, now no, we're not talking about patch, we're talking about a field in which you've got two shurot of kishuim, two shurot of diluim, two shurot of pol hamitzri, that's perfectly all right. Even though now they're up against each other, it's perfectly all right because these two shurot are in themselves well defined graphically. But shura achat shel kishuim, shura achat shel diluim, shura achat shel pol hamitzri, oh, asur. And what does that tell you? I'll tell you what it tells you. It tells you that irvuv of other minim, if you've only got one shuram, that's what we've got over here. The guy who cut through your path, he only left one row, one furrow in the middle. That is not considered to be meaningful. You're mevatel ashura because of irvuv. Isn't that saying that? Very, very clearly. Even in a field where you've got the furrow planted already maybe for 300 meters long, and it's one long furrow of one min, and it's very, very nicker, nonetheless, because there's only a single furrow up next to it, you don't notice a furrow, you notice a mixture. So over here, Koshikane, I mean, you're in the middle of a little aruka, for sure you're going to see a mixture. And how are you telling me that the mixture doesn't make any difference? Where's your Mishnah?
Which is the original design that was cut into?
No, in this case, there was no design it was cut into. Hanarabba, the whole thing was designed with separate shuras. We have shuras of different medium, one up next to each other, and the guy figured since it's a 300 meter long shura, it's very clear that it's not meant to be looked at together with the one next to it, and apapike, if it's not two shuras wide, then it is considered to be irvuv, and we ignore the shura. So if we have a shura in the middle of an aruga, the whole thing looks like a mixed up mess. I mean, of course it's going to be mevatel. What are you telling me that it's not mevatel? So Ravashi's got a problem over here. And he answers, Shine Ocha Deika Sharach. Tell me something, sir. You think the Gemara is playing games when it starts talking about pumpkins and squashes and pol hamitzri? Well, just because we're looking for different minim, so we happen to pick these minim, you don't notice that these minim are all minim that have very, very extensive spreading leaves? You think that's an accident? That's the point. The Mishnah is saying where you're dealing with species that tend to spread, you can't rely on a shura achas. You need to have a minimum of shtei shuras, because otherwise I won't be able to make it out since they keep spreading into the one next to them. If you've got a big thick section, which is obviously pumpkin leaf, and next to you have a big thick section, which is pol hamitzri leaves, okay, that's enough to make enough kamina. But otherwise it'll be mevatel. That's irvuv. Are we talking about where you planted pumpkins? We're talking over here. Stop. We said he made a shura. So whatever. So you planted carrots in your shura. Why is that a problem? This Mishnah is talking dafka, meaning that have sharaka, that have long leaves. Omrav Kan, Omrav Yochanan. Okay, this guy over here has got an interesting plan, but he sure is not maximizing his yield, right? But suppose you want to maximize your yield. Arotzi l'malot kol ginato yer. You want to fill up your entire garden. You don't want like all of this stuff over here with the middle, I have to leave three tfachim empty. I mean, what good is that to me? You've got a simple idea. It's a very modern idea. Of course, in modern terms, it didn't develop because of Kelayim. It developed because of watering systems. And that is to use circles. Anybody who's flown over Midwest and West United States knows this. You take a look at the fields, and what you see is a big circle of a min that's surrounded by the square of the field. Why is this? Because a very simple way to water is to have a machine that walks around on a wheel from a central pivot. You see this actually, they have them in the Galil also around the Kula
Valley. The Menorah Cable Car, I think.
Yeah. So you have a central pivot where the water comes from, and this thing waters around because the pressure of the water keeps pushing it around, and you end up with a circle inside your field, which is watered. You can do the same thing in your aruga. There's no better graphical distinction than a circle in the square. That's perfect. the ultimate graphical distinction, right? So what you do is, you put a big circle, Yorosa Aruga, Shisha Shisha, you make your Aruga. Inside that Aruga, you put in a circle of Hamisha, okay? And putting in a circle of Hamisha allows you to be Mimale Karnotea, Komashiyirtse. Then you can put in whatever you want on the edges, because they're all separated because of the power of your circle. So you got no problem. But he said you could be Mamali the whole thing. But you could the Baini Baini, I understand. But between the circles, you've got the terrible mixture. Because, I mean, you've got your two Tvachim, remember, that were Baina Rugas. You're saying I'm filling the whole thing up. You didn't tell me what am I going to do with that area to perfect your life if I'm able to put in a different mean on every side of my circle. And when they abut each other, you got a big abutment over there. You got 2.5 tefachim of different types of minion, 1.25 tefach on each side. What am I going to do with that? No. I'm going to be honest. Of course, it doesn't mean. When he said b'mamale kol ginato, he didn't mean literally kol ginato. He meant when you're mamale your entire aruga. He didn't mean you're mamale the whole area of all the arugas. You're still going to have to leave the area in between the aruga. You're going to have to be machri ben abinai. Obviously, you can't be mamale. Rabbi Yochanan just meant that you could be mamale the aruga. You can leave your aruga in a nice shape like the one over here in the Tosfos, but you don't have to have these skimpy shapes that we have until now where you just have a little bit of zeronim going down the edges in the middle, and this allows you to maximize your yield. He wasn't saying you can mamish fill up the spot the tefachim in between. Rav Ashi says you can, not only the corners, the two tefachim in between of the gvul.
There can be 4 different
pieces
on the corners, right?
Yeah, but that you can have.
Four different.
Yeah, but you can't have the area in between. Yeah. Yeah, that's a problem. Now, says Rav Ashi, I have a better idea. Because there's another way to make a graphical distinction. And that is, im hayu zru'im shiti zor'an arev, arev zor'an shiti. What you haven't taken into consideration, and which of course you couldn't have taken into consideration until now. So until now we were talking about a row of single plants, because otherwise you'd have too much, you wouldn't have 1.5 tefachim on either side. This is a very skimpy garden. But here we're talking about a nice garden. So now in a nice garden, it's easy to tell whether I planted my rows east-west or I planted them north-south, right? But that itself is a great graphical distinction. If I've got some rows that are clearly heading north, east, west, and other rows that are clearly going north, south, so then it's easy to tell that these are separate rows, and they're not mixing with each other. Therefore, Taina's Rav Ashi, you can actually have the Benaim also. Plant the Bena Benaim in a different direction. And then imagine what this field looks like. Let's say you've got 9 arugot, like this thing over here. So you've got a long shura that's going north-south in between all these arugas. And then inside the aruga, you've got things that are being planted east-west. Nobody's going to mix up that long north-south furrow, basically, is what it looks like, between the arugas with what's growing in the aruga in the other direction. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan really, really meant that you can be mamala the whole thing. That's how you would do it. Eisve Ravina the Rav Ashi, avodat yerek b'yerek acher, shisha tvachim. If you want to have different yerakot that are going to be growing together, you're going to have at least 6 tvachim in your aruga, as defined. V'ro'im otam, and the way in which they would work would only be kitabla mirubat. They would have to be squared tablets. Now what is that telling you? I mean, if it's talking about squares, isn't he saying that circles are no good? I mean, what do you stress? Just say, what is Romanus and kitabla mirubat even supposed to mean?
Why do you
And what are you adding? You're adding the fact that when the Mishnah was matir, the five different meaning, it was only matir the way we defined it, and not in this yield maximizing circle way. And so that isn't any good. So you see, ketabu the shori halav akiyas. If it's not square, you're not allowed to maximize your yield. Now, come on, man. That's for a different purpose, it's saying over there. Ro'imota ketabla merubat is vis-a-vis another kula. What's the other kula? La'atir rosh torah yotze, amen. If you want now to have this aruga next to a sada, don't think you can use a circle next to a sada for the heter of a rosh torah. A heter of a rosh torah needs to have an actual sharp edge, not a circular edge. That's what it's saying. Ayotaina, didn't we say before that ain rosh torah baruga anyway? So why is he saying there's a rosh torah? So Rashi says either Rabbi Yochanan doesn't hold of that, that ain rosh torah baruga, which was Rav's problem with aruga being aruga, or says Rashi a very interesting thing. When we said ain rosh torah baruga, we were talking about when both the line and the dot was an aruga. But suppose there was a real field and an aruga. Would you then say that ain rosh torah baruga? In other words, was it because both sides were only very formalized diagrams? I mean, a line, doesn't really look like much. But a field? Now, a field looks like something. So I have one dot, so to speak, of my single carrot that's coming in from the aruga. That is nikar keneged, even though it's only on aruga, it's nikar keneged a sada. He only was saying it's not nikar keneged another aruga. The other aruga is sparse, scraggly. It doesn't look like it's meaningful to make that kind of distinction. It's a formalized square. But over here, it's a real square. So maybe everybody would be made that there's no problem of a rosh torah on an aruga when it's coming into a sada. So let's assume that. Then what is it saying? Ronis and ketabla merubat. If you want to have this aruga of your akot next to a field, you can't plant it in a circle. You're going to have to plant it in a square. That's all it's saying. He wasn't saying you can't have a circle and an aruga to maximize the aruga itself. Come on, gentlemen, that was rather painless. I mean, look at this. That looks hopeless.